Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
It has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on a big step!
Oh,
brother! Lead Toledo artist. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead!
Hello, and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann, and with me as always is Rich Craich. And we are back talking again with Adam Cribley, and this time we are going to talk about the top 50 case for Artis Gilmore, a great ABA and NBA star from the 70s and 80s, and looking at kind of the basic overall numbers for him. He is ninth all-time in win shares and 23rd all-time in win shares for 48. But that is looking at both the NBA and ABA. And Rich and I, before we get more into this, we've sort of been talking about throughout sort of our shows some of our, like, the criteria that we were kind of going from, like whether we were considering international play and how we were kind of considering the ABA. And, you know, we kind of what we sort of determined is that we would go with, like, they, to be under consideration, they had to be there based on their NBA credentials alone, but ABA credentials or any other kind of credentials could be a boost beyond that. And you agree with that, obviously.
Yeah, I think so, and we've discussed this a little bit. I think, yeah, that's the way I'm going to kind of use it, is NBA always going to be first, and in that. But, you know, if they have credentials, and we're going to talk about a guy right now who so far and away dominated their ABA in a way that, you know, if you have just okay stats in there, or at least decent stats in the ABA, I mean, we could sort of grade it on a curve a little bit, you know, that sort of stuff. Artis Gilmore is a guy, and we'll talk a little bit more about him, you know, as we get through this podcast. He's a guy who just so dominated the competition in the ABA that it's hard not to add that to his case. You know what I mean? Where here's a guy who, his NBA case is okay. It's not bad. But then you look at his ABA, and then you look at a guy who, man, it's hard not to make a case for him for the top 50 based off a lot of what he did in the ABA, but, you know, using the NBA as the main barometer for their kind of career and judging it. So
yeah,
it's going to be tough. And it might be a case-by-case basis for a lot of these guys, but he's going to be one of the interesting ones because he's one of the ABA's best. So
yeah, I mean, he might be the best ABA player of all time. I mean, even including Dr. J. I mean, that's how good his ABA run was. But yeah, if you look at his totals, he's also 24th all time in value over replacement player for both leagues, and he is 33rd all time in box score plus minus. If you look at NBA only, they're still pretty strong. The 61st in win shares total, 49th in win shares per 48, 33rd in box score plus minus, and 49th in value over replacement player. So I still think that that's definitely a top 50 candidacy, just if you consider the NBA stuff. So, he certainly belongs in discussion. If he belongs in, that's another matter. But also has five all NBA first teams. And I was shocked that he never made a all NBA first or second team. That surprised me a lot. He was a four-time all NBA defensive first team, one-time NBA defensive second team. He had 10 seasons where he was in the top 10 for win shares per 48. Five of them were ABA, five NBA, and then six times top 10 value over replacement player. Six of those were in the NBA. So very productive seasons based on those metrics in the NBA and ABA. He is second all time in true shooting percentage, an incredibly efficient shooter, or scorer is probably the better way of putting it. He didn't shoot from that far, but it was one of the first people to ever combine high volume with high efficiency, which we talked a little bit with Curtis Harris about. And he's 15th all time in rebounds per game, and he is 15th all time in blocks per game. So a lot of great numbers there. In some of the other all-time ranks, he is 75th all-time in the Bill Simmons Book of Basketball Pyramid, and he is 84th all-time in the Slam 500 Greatest Players Ever. So that was quite a long-winded way of getting to the point. But Adam, how do you feel about Artis Gilmore's top 50 case?
Well, I think that you made a couple excellent points there. And I think the biggest one is the ABA question. And so, like, from ages, 22 to 26, he's in the ABA and he's dominant. And arguably, alongside Julius Erving, the best player in league history. And if you look at his, I always like to go on Basketball Reference and check out similarity scores just to see kind of what other players might be similar rank. And for artists, I was amazed. So the top four similarity scores are Shaquille O'Neal, Bill Russell, David Robinson, and Moses Malone. And that's pretty elite company. And so if you include those ABA years in there, even at somewhat of a discount, you have to include them in the conversation.
Yeah. What's funny too, I enjoy the similarity scores for, a little bit. For looking at just scope of guys' careers as well. And what's funny about Artis Gilmore, you mentioned, those first few years with him. If you look at the comps of in those years, at his age, those first few years or whatever, and you look at his comps in those years and the similarity scores for those first few seasons, his first season, the highest comp is Kareem. Second season, his highest comp is Wilt Chamberlain. Third season, Wilt Chamberlain. Fourth, Wilt Chamberlain. Fifth, Wilt Chamberlain. Sixth, Wilt Chamberlain. Seventh, Wilt Chamberlain. It sort of dies down a little bit as he kind of gets in the NBA, gets a little bit older, but that's a pretty good company to keep, huh? It's Will Chamberlain. It's amazing. It's incredible. It's a guy who really, really dominated the ABA, and it becomes an interesting question then of we talked about how much you value the ABA, how much you do that. I mean, when you're a guy that's so dominant, I mean, there's something there. I don't know.
I mean, the ABA, when he played, was a stronger league for most of that time. And obviously, the top stars of the ABA came over to the NBA, and most of them did just as well. They were the first year, I think, half of the All-Stars were ABA All-Stars. And, okay, maybe the ABA was a bit of a weaker league. Maybe even particularly with big men, it was weaker league. But it was similar quality. I mean, I don't think we should knock him too much down for, it's just ABA rather than NBA. Because I think that level of quality was pretty comparable. Looking at the video for him was a really interesting revelation for me. I did some, but not as much of the younger stuff. But really, he was so fluid. He was so quick. His footwork was outstanding. I mean, he reminded me really of a mix of Wilt and Kareem, kind of bridging those guys as far as not quite as graceful as Kareem, but kind of in that league, but also, some of the physical dominance of just the height and the power of Wilt. I mean, it really was a blend of those guys, and he's not quite as great as those guys, obviously, but I mean, he's still, played tremendously well and even in the NBA, I mean, he was still, he didn't really make, like I said, I was shocked that he didn't make any of those all NBA first and second teams. Now, back when he played, there was not a third team, which hurts a little bit. And, he's behind Kareem and Moses during that time, both for all NBA teams and all NBA, defensive teams. And there's Bill Walton here and there. There's Maurice Lucas for defensive team. There's Mark Eaton, so he's just always kind of stuck behind either a couple of great players or stuck behind, a defensive specialist like Eaton or just, guys who would, here and there just have a really great year and would knock him down. So, we talked a little bit about Dantley about whether it's the, you know, is he knocked down because like he was underrated, like the things that he did really well weren't as appreciated then as they are now? Or is he knocked down because, you know, the people who watched him at the time were right? He just wasn't quite as good as, you know, the guys that he ended up being, you know, stuck behind.
Well, I think Artis actually was more respected by peers at the time than was Dantley. And so Gilmore came, you know, he came into the league and there were immediately calls that this would be the second coming of Wilt Chamberlain versus Bill Russell. The rivalry between Gilmore and Abdul-Jabbar would kind of mirror that or replicate it. And for a couple years, it was a debate. I mean, obviously Kareem was the best player in the league, but Gilmore was, along with Malone, definitely in that conversation for the next tier. And so I think he got more respect at the time among peers, certainly, than did Dantley. But I think maybe in hindsight, we saw it's almost like you can't unsee Patrick Ewing playing for Seattle and Orlando. You know, we kind of saw late career Artis and missed out on those ABA years when he was quick and when he was nimble and when he could block shots. And I think we kind of saw the like I said, the late career of him, where he was slower and where Bill Simmons makes fun of him as rigor Artis. And that's kind of the picture that sticks, as opposed to being the tremendously skilled basketball player he was.
Yeah, I think, like Jason said, it was kind of a revelation watching the video of him, because a lot of the stuff that I've seen is, you know, of course, the NBA stuff, where he's just not quite that player that we sort of, the stats sort of show in the ABA. And then you watch this ABA footage. I watched one of the clips, I think it was some 1977 game, and just see just how dominant and just how he could go and pretty much wherever he wanted on the court. There's a few possessions where he gets like so close to the basket and he gets the ball so close to the basket, the other team just gives up. And even the announcer, the commentator says, well, Artis is too close to the basket, so the defender's going to let him have that one. And it was just like, oh my God, like he just so physically dominated the guys, and he was so efficient around the basket that pretty much he caught it within a few feet. And the guy literally just walks away and says, okay, well, you know, that possession's over. You know, I'm not going to worry about that. And that's just kind of crazy to think of a guy like that. And then you look at the numbers and it reflects that. I mean, this is a guy who all-time great, you know, efficiency. I'll run down a few of the advanced stats here for his position and all-time era and all that sort of stuff. So, of course, ABA and NBA that we're counting amongst these, but 14th in points per 36, 21st in blocks per 36, third in effective field goal percentage, third in win shares per 48. Wilt and Kareem obviously are above him. And then second in win shares, remarkably. And then all-time, 25th in points per 36, 45th in total rebounds per 36, 54th in blocks, 5th in effective field goal percentage, so all-time among centers, you know, 5th in that, 10th in win shares per 48, and then 3rd in win shares. So you look at a guy, you know, you combine his ABA and NBA stuff, I mean, that's an all-time, you know, top 10, arguably, center of all time. So it's pretty remarkable what he was able to do, especially on the efficiency end, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, the numbers are so good for him. I mean, they really are. Even without the ABA stuff or giving the ABA stuff a bit of a discount, I mean, you know, if you're just looking at the NBA numbers, I mean, they just, I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time making a case for him not being in, honestly. I mean, you know, I from what, you know, kind of the research I've done and, you know, from what I've read, there's not really necessarily a reason to not put him in, other than, you know, he wasn't as great as Kareem and Russell and Will, maybe, or, you know, maybe even Jack, but I think he's firmly in that next tier of big men. I think he's right there with Ewing, maybe even Hakeem, and you know, David Robinson's another guy who's like, the reputation isn't quite as good, but you look at the numbers and they're just like amazing. And obviously he was a great player too, and so forth. But I mean, I think he's like around kind of that, like that second tier of big men. And there's so many great big men that you could be kind of like, well, maybe he's just on the outside looking in. But I kind of like him being on there right now. I mean, he's not in for me, but he's definitely a guy who, you know, I would consider him likely or close to likely.
So does his gigantic afro rise him up the rankings a little bit? Can we give him a bump for that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you can connect like a longish sort of beard with the top of your afro. In terms of like overall height of hair, one of the best. I mean, there's a huge afro and then a little bit of a goatee, but they're connected by the sideburns. Like it's really an untouchable haircut.
Well, so I was reading somewhere and I saw that when he signed with the Bulls, they were trying to do this big PR thing, or maybe it was the Colonels in the ABA. And so they measured him, and from his the bottom of his feet to the top of his afro was 7'8". So I thought that was pretty impressive, and definitely has to go in the plus column.
Oh, certainly, yeah,
yeah, it's an all time. It's you know, top five all time afro, I would say, in the NBA, ABA NBA history. You know,
So I've got a theory. I've got a theory for why Gilmore kind of gets pushed away. So he left Chicago. They didn't win a title. Jordan comes in and of course creates a dynasty. He goes to San Antonio. He leaves. David Robinson comes in. They create a dynasty. And so do you think he kind of suffers from that same, you know, we were talking about Adrian Dantley, with the Pistons. And when he leaves, they win a title, and that makes us kind of forget how good Dantley was. Do you think Gilmore kind of suffers from that same comparison because he leaves two franchises that become dynasties?
Yeah, for me, I think there's enough distance away from those dynasties that are from those from when he left those teams to win the fact that they started winning titles that I see it, but I don't quite think that might be it. I think there's a couple of things. One, he doesn't have one core team that he played with. Like he played, you know, basically he played similar number of years and minutes with Chicago, Kentucky, and the Spurs. So I think it's harder when you don't have like one home for a player when they kind of share homes, and that's tougher. His best years were with a Kentucky Colonels team that doesn't exist anymore, which doesn't help either. Like his memory isn't really kept alive. Like the torch isn't being carried by any of these franchises. And that may be part of like, you know, back when he played with the Bulls and the Spurs, neither one of those teams had much of a history. So at the time he played with those teams, he was one of the greatest players they ever had. Where now, obviously, he's not close to where with the Bulls and the Spurs. He's not thought of in those terms because they obviously have the legendary teams that are the first teams that everybody thinks of. So I guess in that sense, it may hurt him. But I don't know if that connection is necessarily made specifically.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. I mean, I think there was enough time from, especially, you know, focusing on Chicago a little bit, enough time of those teams. And then you had, of course, the post, you know, artist years, which is like the Reggie Theus years or whatever, that were just god awful and just terrible. And like the Orlando Woolridge year. And then you got Jordan, you got all those. So I think there's enough of a gap between those two. But just speaking from somebody who, you know, is kind of in Chicago and sort of knows that a lot of people don't really mention Artis Gilmore as like an all-time great Bull. And those teams are really forgotten. Those late 70s Bulls teams among casual Bulls fans, just a complete non-factor. Like people do not realize that those teams came within, you know, a few games of being, you know, a championship team, or at least like, you know, vying for a championship. People just do not know that. They just don't forget. There's just so much of that cloud of Jordan and those six titles that any other Bulls era before that is just completely forgotten about, and I could see that affecting him, at least from a national standpoint, or from you know, a casual fan standpoint, is that you forget how good he was and how good those Bulls teams were because they just got swallowed up. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned that, Adam, because initially I'm thinking no, there's no way, you know, there's 7 year gap between, you know, that, you know, artist leaving and Jordan coming in. But then you think about it, and knowing, you know, what I know of speaking with casual Bulls fans, I mean, I don't know if I ask one of my friends what they're, you know, what they think of Artis Gilmore on the Bulls, they probably ask me, I didn't even know Artis Gilmore played for the Bulls. And that's, you know, and he's a guy who in the pre, you know, they show a video before the game and he's in like 2 seconds of it. Like you see Artis Gilmore do a hook shot and that's it. And that's all you got. And it's like, but his legacy is huge in Chicago. It should be huge in Chicago, but it's not. So yeah, I guess, you know, at first I thought you were kind of, you know, maybe on the rock, right, not the right track, but I don't know. There's a lot to that, I think. So it's interesting. That was a really good point.
Well, if you look at the two big Bulls eras, obviously there's the 90s era, but then they were really good in the early 70s. And then in the middle, you have Reggie Theus and Artis Gilmore and Orlando Woolridge. I mean, I think you're right. I think that kind of they definitely get lost. I mean, the early 70s stuff is, you know, forgotten enough, let alone the teams in the middle that weren't that great. And yeah, I mean, I agree that obviously the Jordan era Bulls are great in the 90s, and Artis is gone by 82 or 83 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think that there is kind of that, you know, that lack of institutional memory or whatever about these these all-time greats, and because he didn't have a home, like Jason mentioned, San Antonio, Chicago, Kentucky, he didn't bounce around, but he didn't have a what I would consider a home franchise.
Yeah, I do think that makes a difference for guys how they're remembered. I mean, I really do think if you don't have someone kind of carrying your torch, you're not going to be as remembered nearly as much as, you know, unless you were part of like one team. And obviously, winning championships helps, and Gilmore never did in the NBA. So, but yeah, he just doesn't have that one. So it's harder, I think, for guys to get remembered. And you know, Gilmore didn't play. Most of his career didn't really play in a time when the NBA was, a sport that was that popular. You know, it was toward the end of his career when it started to really take off. So that's another factor. And he was playing in San Antonio then, who wasn't really pay attention to. So
he's a guy that's interesting to wonder, you know, if the marketing machine of the NBA, if he was in his prime when the marketing machine of the NBA really got going and really understood, would he be a guy that they would market, or would he be a guy they would sort of pull to the back? I don't know. He's interesting because we talk about the hair and we sort of laugh about that, and we sort of think, you know, obviously he probably wouldn't have that, you know, in the mid 80s or whatever. But thinking if the NBA had, you know, the marketing muscle it did in the 80s, in the 70s, you know, the late 70s or whatever, when he was still pretty good, it's an interesting thing to think if he would do that, because he's a very, you know, he's a big character. He's very loud, you know, on the court in a lot of ways. And he kind of gets lost in that because it's the era that sort of gets lost. I mean, we talked about this off air when we were talking about, you know, various projects that we're all doing, or you two specifically are doing. And his best time was in an era where people just kind of go, you know, I don't know if any casual fans know much about anything about the 70s NBA. So it hurts a lot, I think.
Yeah. Anything else, Adam?
No, that's all. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, no problem. And thanks, everyone, for continuing to check out our shows. We're continuing this Top 50 project until the beginning, until right before the beginning of the season. So we'll keep having episodes looking at guys until we get to the end and pick our new top 50. You can find our podcast at harvardparoxysm.com. We also are on iTunes, both the Harvard Paroxysm Basketball Network of podcasts, and we also have our own iTunes feed now, Over and Back NBA. If you search for that, you'll find us there. We would appreciate a rating and review on either or both feeds. It helps people find us. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Over and Back NBA. And also overandbacknba.com for you can check out our forums, where we have a lot of discussions about the top 50 players and other things. Have a good a community discussion there that Adam is grateful enough to be a part of. So thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back again soon.